Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It is Monday, and hope that you had a great weekend. It was another fun weekend, cold weekend here in the Mid-South area, obviously, with a big cold front, I believe, coming through. It seems like we're getting in that area of the fall where you could see those 30 to 35 degree temperature swings. So fall was definitely in the air. Football was back, you know, in its full slate. And of course, we're winding up the baseball season now with the World Series. Pretty exciting weekend between the Tampa Bay Rays and the Los Angeles Dodgers. So even though the NBA is not going on right now, you know, definitely are looking. We definitely still, thankfully, have sports going on to enjoy. Obviously, this is the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSAC. The podcast wherever podcasts are available, Stitcher, iPhone, or the podcast app on your iPhone, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to change it up a bit. We are going to do a prospect preview, but we actually, in the first segment, we're going to talk about the news that came across this weekend about some, some hopeful news as far as the start of the season, as well as, you know, some information about just how impactful this past season was on the NBA's revenue. And in the second segment, we're going to talk about College of Charleston guard Grant Riler, an older prospect, but someone that definitely offers a lot of intrigue. If the Grizzlies feel that they may see some trimming of the roster when it comes to the guard position, he could make a lot of sense for Memphis. So we'll talk about him in the second and the third segment. Before we get started, also, we want to remind you of our title sponsor, which is Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now, not only will you find a wide assortment of flavors, but if you put in the promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your next order while supplies last. So as I had mentioned about a month ago, you know, once the NBA season reached its finale, the Lakers won the title, you know, we were entering, you know, another, you know, form of unprecedented territory when it came to this NBA offseason. Obviously, the timing of it on the calendar is certainly different. You know, we're right, as a matter of fact, right about now, we typically, any other year, are talking about the start of the NBA season. But this year, obviously, you know, with all that's gone on, we now are in the offseason. Well, the expected time frame was that it looked like that it may be late January to early February before the season would get started. You know, and, you know, probably about 10 days ago, a lot of, you know, people started making educated guesses that they felt like Martin Luther King Day, you know, January 18th would be, you know, a day to potentially get the season started. The whole goal for the season starting that late was the NBA pushing back the season feasibility, pushing it back as far as they could with the hope that by the time the season started, fans could be back into the stands. And obviously, you know, the NBA could start getting back one of its main revenues of earnings, you know, back in play. Well, the reason why that's so important is because it was released this weekend that the NBA's projections came in $1.5 billion less than they had, you know, anticipated, based off what they were trying to project as far as COVID-19 and everything else going on, as far as the pandemic, some impact on the NBA season. Their projections were basically $1.5 billion off. And so that certainly is going to make an impact. It certainly is something that has to be reckoned with. It also was said that it cost $200 million to, you know, get the bubble going. And while it was wonderful, the bubble was a tremendous success. We now know just how, you know, damaging, you know, this pandemic has been, you know, to the NBA's revenue streams. And though it was expected, it still is a big number. And it just goes to show, you know, kind of how, you know, much it's going to take just to get back to where things were. So with that being said, you know, one of the things that had come out early, you know, towards, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of last week was that instead of January, the NBA was targeting December 22nd now as a start to the season. Now they're, you know, to me personally, I had thought that the more sensible approach was to start the season in January and February, do a bit of a shorter season, you know, get to August, and then you would have your, you know, playoffs and championship in August, and then just have a shortened off season before the 2021-2022 regular season. That's when you would try to get things, you know, back to normal. That way the players, due to, you know, their out of routine circumstance. They could have, you know, the time off that they needed to get prepared for another regular season, and you could also give the NBA more time to kind of adjust and make sure it's doing things efficiently and effectively to try to get things back to normal as soon as possible. But instead, it looks like that they're going to accelerate the offseason now. A lot of things are going to have to come together. One of the reasons why they may be doing it now is because, you know, their hope of potentially getting fans back in the stands, it may not be as realistic as they thought, even towards, you know, the end of January, early February. So the thought process is that they may just go ahead, why not go ahead and get started now and at least get, you know, whatever type of earnings you can get going for the league going as soon as possible. So looking at December 22nd, you know, is the hope. Now, a lot of people, including myself, have mentioned that, you know, starting the NBA season around Christmas time makes a lot of sense, and you can make the NBA go through the summer, you know, as far as the playoffs and you know, obviously the championship, and then basically you would have a December to July or August season and then get things going back every December. I think that that does make some sense. Maybe you could do it around Thanksgiving. That could be a future consideration for future seasons. But of course, right now, the big question is, okay, not only do you have to get questions answered about the salary cap, you got to get questions answered, you know, about getting all the settings and things like that. You know, are we going to have games in regular fashion where teams will be playing in their home stadiums? Is there going to be a bubble type setup? So on and so forth. And also, of course, you've got to finalize things about the draft leading up to the draft and free agency. That's why I don't necessarily know if December 22nd is that realistic. I know the NBA would like for it to get done, and I'm sure it could, but we're a week before November, and at some point you've got to plan on free agency starting, which you're likely looking, you know, at, you know, it has to be probably November 15th or right when the draft starts, because then when you get to December, you can't really have free agency start on December 1st, like, you know, had initially been anticipated by some folks since the draft is on November 18th, because then that only gives you 3 weeks to go through free agency and then have some type of training camp to get these players, you know, not back in shape, but back into the regular scheme of things as far as they go. Typically, training camp is something that lasts several weeks. So as far as accelerating the time for the season to start to December 22nd, ideally, you know, it makes some sense. But getting all the ducks in a row to, you know, as far as free agency, see the draft and then training camp, a lot's going to have to come together quickly, because you really can't go into December without free agency and the draft already pretty much having been taken care of. So not saying it can't be done, it'll just be interesting to see how quickly it will be done. In the end, I think that it is ambitious to think the season will start December 22nd. It certainly could. If the NBA were to get a lot of things in line this week, you know, then it becomes a much more realistic opportunity. But at the end of the day, I just think it's more sensible to probably look around January 15th, even if, you know, your thought process is that, you know, fans in the stands is likely not something that's going to happen until probably the spring or the summer. I think for the players involved, you know, in the league itself, and just, you know, making everything go as smooth as possible, giving what you can control, because what's outside of your control right now is not too positive. You know, within what you can control, I think a little bit more time, you know, may be more realistic. So while I think they may shoot for December 22nd, I would not be surprised if we still see the season start pushed back until the early or middle part of January. One other thing that I can tell you that I know that we all push back, and that is plans to try to add health to our day. You know, I know that the New Year's coming up, and we're all the time thinking about, oh, well, I could just make a New Year's resolution. At the New Year, I will try to get in better shape. Well, there are ways you can right now still add health to your day, and one of those ways is Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. A lot of times, you either got to sacrifice taste for health or health for taste. Well, with Built Bar, you can do both. And the great thing about Built Bar is that, you know, no matter what, you know, taste you like, Built Bar is likely going to have it. If you go to BuiltBar.com, there's a wide assortment of tastes there. My favorite's the peanut butter, but you'll likely find something that you need. If you go to BuiltBar.com and put in the promo code LOCKEDON right now, you'll get $10 off your next order. Again, that's go to BuiltBar.com, put in the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your next order while supplies last. But I can tell you this for certain, if you make Built Bar a part of your daily routine, it's going to be there to stay. Again, go to BuiltBar.com and put in the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your next order from Built Bar. One thing I got to make certain of is that if I'm going to talk about a prospect, I need to make sure that I get his name right. I apologize in the first segment. Grant Riller is actually who we're going to be speaking about. A four-year guard, a senior from College of Charleston in South Carolina. He is the next man up in our Grizzlies prospect profile. A little bit more of a condensed version this time around due to having some pretty important things to talk about in this first segment regarding the updated news on the schedule for the NBA. Also talking about just how much of an impact the pandemic and other things had on the season this year. But in the second segment, we're going to talk about, kind of combine, what stands out about Riller and also statistically, really where, the value in his game truly lies. And then in the third segment, we'll go right into where he makes sense for the Grizzlies. And it's not hard. You don't have to look long to figure out what makes Grant Riller a really intriguing NBA prospect. And it is just his ability to score. Grant Riller is probably one of the most crafty and most resourceful scorers in this draft. And it's not just, for instance, when we talk about Isaiah Joe or Jordan Nwora, it's not his ability to shoot the three, though he can. It's not his, the different ways in which he could shoot the three. It's just when we talk about a three-level score at the rim, in the mid-range, and from beyond the arc, Riller legitimately is a threat from all three different positions. And it's not just athleticism. If you're wanting the boxes to be checked, Riller seems on film definitely seems to check them all. Instinct, intelligence, athleticism, the ability to create off the dribble, the ability to get open without the ball, the ability to drive past his man, all those different things are quite impressive. When it comes to his ability as a scorer, the top thing that stands out is he does have the ability to get to the rim. Now, it's not as if he's Ja Morant in terms of his ability to just use his athleticism and body contortion to get to the rim. He has those skills, but not to the level of Morant. It's his burst. In a short space, Riller really is good at getting past his man and then getting into the lane, and he can get to his spots with the ball and dribbling before the defenders really have an opportunity to. But beyond that, because he's able to keep his head up due to trustworthy ball handling, he's able to adjust and then get off shots. He's got great touch around the rim. He's very ambidextrous when it comes to his touch. He can make layups from many different angles. He can do floaters. He can do short shots. He can do mid-range. There's just a lot of utility when it comes to Grant Riller's ability to score, especially inside the arc. But it's not just that. Also beyond the arc, Riller really is someone who could be a threat from there as well. Overall, Riller is one of 119 guards that attempted 1,650 or more shots during their college career since the 1992-1993 season. Only 119 guards have done that. Now, that may not seem to be that rare of company, but just think about how many Division I teams or whatever you want to call the NCAA's Division I college basketball group now. Just think of how many of the guards have played over the past 30 years, and he's one of 119. But the big, big stat that really stands out, I don't necessarily think one stat can really identify a player's talent, but in Grant Riller's case, I think that this stat stands out more for him than it does for a lot of others. Of those 119 guards in the NCAA over the past 30 years that have attempted 1,650 or more field goals, Grant Riller by far has the highest two-point field goal percentage at 59.3%. He made nearly 60% of his two-point shots. Now, you would think that that would be because he would be doing a lot of it at the rim. Well, that is correct. A lot of his shots do come at the rim. But it's also because of his ability to get open in the mid-range, in the 14-foot area, to where he can either shoot the mid-range jump shot, shoot a floater, whatever it may be. But his finishing ability and also his ability to create space and get his shot off in crowded areas, that field goal percentage on two-point shots, that shows you just how toolsy and resourceful he is at finding his shot. Now, he probably can shoot a bit too much. Over the in his second, third, and fourth year, he averaged 12.8 field goal attempts per game. He averaged nearly 15 field goal attempts per game in both his junior and senior year. Of course, it probably was more to deal with the talent on his team that he just clearly was the best scorer. But when it comes to Riller's ability as a guard, what stands out a bit more about him than other guards is just the resourcefulness, the consistency, and his ability in so many different ways to find his shot at the rim, in the mid-range, whatever it may be. From three, Riller also does, it can be a threat. Now, over on the course of his college career, he attempted 526 threes and made 187 of them. Basically, he shot a little over 35% on 526 threes. He did get a bit, he was kind of up and down actually throughout his college career. 33% nearly made 40% of his three-point shots as a sophomore, and then 33% and 36% his junior and senior season. But the other thing about it is that he can both shoot pull-up shots. If you're wanting a pull-up shooter, Riller definitely is someone that can create his own space through his ball handling, through quick movements, through intelligent footwork, and he also is good on catch-and-shoot opportunities. I think at the Stipend, they had mentioned right before the suspension of the season this past year in the NCAA, I believe that he shot 41 attempts, at the Ringer, they had mentioned that he did shoot nearly 41% on catch-and-shoot opportunities actually throughout his career. Up until the suspension of this past season, he shot 41% on catch-and-shoot opportunities. So beyond his ability to do what he can with the ball within the arc, outside the arc, he still can also, you know, find success in multiple ways. He can shoot when he's heavily defended. He can find his own shot in short spaces through his ball handling and his footwork, and he also has the capability of being able to be in catch-and-shoot option. So we've talked about, for several of the prospects that I've mentioned, it's the ability for them to score either as a shooter, maybe in the post. Riller as a guard, his toolbox for scoring likely is deeper than a lot of other guards that are in this draft, and that is an encouraging sign. That's something that you want to see in today's game, especially as a reserve guard, which Riller, at least for the start of his career, will probably be, because he is a bit small to really be trusted as an off guard. He's more of a combo guard. But Riller off the bench, that type of resourcefulness as a scorer is highly encouraging. Now, there are a couple of things, though, that also stand out that, you know, probably add to the success that he had. Number one, he played at the College of Charleston. He did not have that much experience against highly ranked teams or highly talented teams. So that's one thing to keep in mind, is that he's not played against a lot of, you know, high-level competition. Also, he's nearly 24 years old. Now, for Grizzlies fans, that really doesn't mean that much, because, you know, we heard the same argument about Brandon Clark last year, in that, you know, older prospects may not be as attractive because they're more of a finished product. It's likely that Riller is more of a finished product than most of the other talents that are in this draft. However, there also is clear talent there in Riller's game that helps him fit a needed role on a team. In my opinion, that's as a potential sixth or seventh man, you know, off the bench, who's your source of instant offense going forward. Now, there is also a reason why he's likely limited to that type of role for his future in the NBA, and that is due to his defense. There is some skill on Riller's end. For instance, he averaged, for a guard, he averaged 4.6 defensive rebounds and 5.1 total rebounds a game. That's pretty impressive for a guard, especially his size. He also averaged 1.6 steals. The problem is, though, is that there's also clear lack of energy at times on defense. Now, there, if you look at some of the scouting reports, some folks point out that he had a high usage percentage at Charleston, which is true, so he may have been conserving his energy, but there's just not that consistent effort on defense that you'd like to see. And if that's the case, it's not as if Riller just, you know, is able to make plays off of his athleticism and instinct alone. The same type of intelligence and instincts and the things that he uses to help him be such a good and resourceful scorer at times on offense, those type of things need to be applied on defense for him to add value. And a team concept defensive-wise, especially on the perimeter, Riller can make some plays. He can provide some decent defense. However, if his energy continues to be, you know, or if his effort and energy continue to be a question mark, then you run into his defense becoming a liability, and you run the risk, and it seems like that a few, folks had mentioned this about Riller, and you could see it a bit on film as well, you run the risk to where, with the likelihood that he's going to add value on offense, you know, is it going to be negated by defense? And overall, what's the net value that he provides? If what he is able to provide on offense is wiped away on defense, well, then that's not really someone that you can trust, you know, especially late in games or in high leverage situations. So the thing about Riller is this: when it comes to his overall game, his offense certainly is there for him to add value, especially as a reserve scorer, that microwave type instant scoring offense. He also is going to be able to be a guy who could basically, I don't want to necessarily say take over the game, but he does have, he has plenty of experience with high usage, so he can both create for himself and has the ability to, within a team concept, make things go. He's not really a playmaker for others. You know, over his college career, he averaged, 2.8 assists and 2.2 turnovers per game. So nearly a 1-to-1 ratio. He never was a big creator for, you know, for the players around him. That could change. It could be due to the fact that, kind of like with John Morant, the talent around him just was not that good at scoring, so he may have had to do a lot of it himself. So you may see his playmaking take off a little bit in the NBA, but his decision-making when it comes to making plays for others, a lot of times, you know, there's a little bit to be left to be desired because he does create, he does cause turnovers himself. He can, you know, basically he can make some errors when it comes to trying to make playmaking options for his teammates. And the other thing is that he likely, being a volume scorer, he is someone who probably does pass up good passes for him to take a shot, and that is a bit of a concern as well. So yes, Riller definitely is a very talented scorer. I think that it is very likely he's going to be someone who can find success in the NBA when it comes to scoring. But I also think due to his defensive limitations, the questions about his effort and his limits as a playmaker, I also think with Riller, you're going to have to use him in short spurts. He's that type of guy who, if he's going to make it in the NBA, it's going to be due to impressive scoring rates in short spurts off the bench. I think that's really the role that is designed for him. I think it's a role that fits for him. And that's something that if you have that, and anybody could use that, even the Grizzlies, which we'll talk about in a moment, if you have someone who can have impressive scoring rates and short spurts off the bench, that is a big, big key to keeping your offense consistent. And in today's NBA, offensive consistency is obviously a huge advantage for teams to have. So we talked about the Grizzlies, though. Offensive consistency is something that they had more than many expected due to their passing this year. And they also have a lot of depth when it comes to their guards. So why would Riller be a fit? Why could he be a target for Memphis? Coming up, I'll explain that in detail. So with Grant Riller, I think that two things are true, in my opinion. One, I do think that the scoring talent and potential is real. Even though he did not face the best of competition in college, and he is older for a prospect that, you know, will be 24, in the not too distant future, I do think that he will have the ability to find ways to score and be a potential, you know, reliable reserve when it comes to scoring at the next level. However, I also think that the thing that is true is that he is a mystery. And one, you know, we talk about upside plays in the draft, you know, these guys that, you know, when they face lower competition, you know, but there are some upsides to their game. Certainly that's true with Riller, but I also think he's more of a downside risk than many others. Due to his age and due to the lack of competition that he played, I think that there also could be, you know, the fact that the rest of his game will struggle to translate at the NBA level. And also, I do think he's a risk that when he's on the court, whatever value he adds on offense, that could be taken away by his defense. However, with that being said, scoring is what matters. Shooting is what matters. And not just shooting, but being able to get your shot in various ways also matters in today's NBA. And I think that that's certainly the strengths in Riller's game. I also think that he's a decent rebounder, so I think that he could add value in transition as well. However, when it comes to the Grizzlies, I just don't think that there is enough there for, you know, him to be a priority. You could say that about any pick, you know, that's going to be there at 40. You know, there's really not a pick out there that's going to, you know, be a preference to what the Grizzlies do on their roster. But I think that in Riller's case, it's going to have to take more of specific happenings to really make it make sense to where he could have value. In my opinion, Riller is one of those candidates who could pay dividends in the future, but I don't necessarily know if on the Grizzlies it's going to be immediate dividends. I think Riller, instead of being an option at 40, is more of an option that you trade back into the late second round or potentially focus on as a priority for a two-way contract, kind of like they did with John Concher. With John Concher, you know, one thing, he had the same thing about him. When it came to his production, he was highly productive, more across the board than when in scoring, you know, when compared to Riller. But he was a two-way contract, and so the Grizzlies invested in him, and it did pay off. I think that Riller could pay off if you invest a late second, like if you buy a second off someone in the late second round, or if you do a two-way contract and you allow for him to develop at South Haven the rest of his game. I think that makes plenty of sense. But because that's what makes sense to me, and also because, again, the Grizzlies guards, really for Riller to, you know, have a shot at being something relevant over the next, you know, even few years, it would require, for instance, D'Anthony Melton going elsewhere and likely one of the other guard options being traded away, you know, for an upgrade on the roster elsewhere. I just think that it's too small and specific of an avenue that you would have to go down for Riller to make sense for the Grizzlies. Again, I think that he would be worth the investment, but I would look more at him being a late second round or two-way contract option. I do feel that Riller is one of these candidates who, if he gets into the right system, I think the Grizzlies could be that system. Someone like the Raptors, someone like the Pacers, you know, these teams that are very good at developing talent and have also been able to take talents that, you know, were either undrafted in the second round, you know, or on two ways, you know, the Spurs are another example. I think Riller is the type of guy who you could turn into a good rotation piece if you can get him to give more consistent effort on defense, and you invest in the resourceful scoring that he has. So when it comes to Riller, I don't see a lot of sense being there for him as at the pick at number 40. I again think that if the Grizzlies wanted to trade in the late second or do it on a two-way, I think Riller would be a fine candidate to invest that type of asset in. But I also think that there are plenty of contenders that are out there who look at this draft and instead of nothing, they view Riller as a developmental talent. I think Riller could be someone, if he is sent to the G League and is able to, you know, get more consistent in the other areas of his game, plus make sure that his talent can translate to the NBA level in terms of scoring, I think that that would be a good development for him. But at the end of the day, I just don't see where he's really someone that makes sense for the Grizzlies at 40. I think that there are more sensible options to really try to invest in when it comes to all-around games, when it comes to the future of the Grizzlies' talent and the way that their core is set up, and also just in terms of the pure upside that's there with younger talents compared to Riller. So at the end of the day, I think that Grant Riller is someone whose game does translate to the NBA in the specific role of that microwave off the bench, you know, self-sufficient scoring option. The big thing that's going to be the key for him, though, is making sure that his defense doesn't negate the value that his offense provides. You know, and in the right system, I think that that's certainly something that would work out. But in terms of the Grizzlies, I think that that's either as a late second or as a two-way contract, you know, when it comes to how they could acquire Riller in this upcoming draft. Ken, thank you enough for taking time to join us. It's as always, as I mentioned, almost every show, it is so much fun doing these episodes. Don't forget that later on this week, coming up Wednesday, as a matter of fact, we will have Ben Pfeiffer, a very exciting young mind when it comes to prospect analysis. You know, in NBA circles, he hosts the Prep to Pro podcast. Does a lot of good work for leading up to the NBA draft. I'm going to be very pleased to welcome him. He'll be with us Wednesday. And we'll continue to have plenty of relevant names in our prospect profiles. Going to look at some more names who probably do become sensible for the Grizzlies at number 40, or even if they want to trade up later on this week. Hope that you have a great start to your week, and we'll talk to you soon here on the Locked on Grizzlies podcast.